Andrew Jobling is a former AFL player. He's also now a much coveted speaker and writer. And his latest book is called Dance Until It Rains. It's a story of his mum, of his relationship with his mum, and most of all about the lessons that she taught him, although it took almost towards the very end of her life before Andrew listened to learn those lessons. A very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Elaine, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Can we talk about the title first, Dance Until It Rains? It's all about persistence and something of a legend, I understand.
It is the story of Dance Until It Rains. It's actually an interesting where the story came from, because I'd written the book, I'd had the manuscript, and I'm thinking, what am I going to call it? You know, I was really puzzled. What's the name? What's the right thing? And I was listening to an audio, and the speaker told this story, and as soon as I heard it, I knew that is it. That just sums it up. It's I just love it. It just encapsulates everything that it's about. And the story really talks about where the Red Indians on the plains and deserts, where they'd been suffering without water for many, many months, and there was legend across the land of the tribe that could actually dance and make it rain. So some of the other tribes thought, well, if they can do it, we can do it too. So they'd start dancing and doing their wild waving of tomahawks and hooping and all that sort of stuff, and some tribes would dance for half an hour or so, and then they'd get a bit bored and they'd look up and the sky's still blue and they'd give up. Some tribes would dance for hours and would eventually give up to blistered feet and aching backs and all that sort of stuff, and they'd think, this isn't working. And then some tribes would even dance for days on end and eventually would give in to lack of results and just ridicule and all that sort of stuff. And so they thought, well, there must be some special secret or dance step. What aren't we doing? So they decided to find this tribe and find out what their secret was. So they travelled across the land and they found the tribe and they sat at the feet of the chief and they said, please, oh great chief, help us. We're suffering. We need water. We need rain. What is your secret? And the chief stood there and he looked at them all and he said very calmly, there is no secret. The solution is simple. We dance until it rains. And I heard that and I just thought, that is it, because at the end of the day, it's all about keep going. You know, whatever it is that we want, it's there for all of us. And I think the reason why most of us, a lot of people, don't achieve the things they want is because they give up too soon. The obstacles are there. And when I look back at my mum's life, particularly after the diagnosis of secondary cancer, that was her attitude. There was no obstacle too great. There was no challenge too hard. There was no pain that she couldn't overcome. She had her eyes firmly fixed on what it was she wanted. And you know, that was one of the things that inspired me the most about her journey.
Mm. And one of those important lessons that really spoke to me was when you're doing your to-do list, you place the important over the urgent. And that sounds so simple, and yet most of us don't do it.
Well, we don't, but then often we're not faced with life or death. And I know for Mum it wasn't easy, but it was simple when her choices were, well, I need to prioritise my health or lose it. And you know, what I try and do now is to inspire people to work out what is that one thing, that thing that will force you to make better decisions. And I know for Mum, you know, when she decided, I'm living, you know, that's non-negotiable. I'm going to beat this. I'm going to overcome it, because at the end of the day, it's my family that I love and I want to be with. They were her reason. That was her drive. Overcoming, you know, urgent is irrelevant. Is this important to my survival? Is this part of what I need to do to be around with my family? And if it's not, it's easy to eliminate. And it's sort of there's so much out there about time management and prioritizing and this and that, and we all fight with it so much. And I think the problem is, as soon as we can understand what is most important to us, then making the right decisions is actually quite an easy thing, and prioritising is quite a simple thing to do.
Mm. And that includes, I would think, making time for people as well as for what it is you want to do and be.
Totally.
Andrew, Mum Sue did not have the easiest of lives. Came here just before the outbreak of war as a very young migrant from Hungary, and at the other end of her life, a 15-year battle with cancer outlived all the predictions of all the specialists.
That's right. That's right. She was a very special lady, and when I look back on her life, and as you said in your introduction, it wasn't really until the last few months before she died that I actually learnt a lot of this stuff.
What made you do that? What made you sit down and finally listen to who she was and what she had to say?
Well, I buried my head firmly in the sand for the vast majority because I didn't want to ever believe that she would die. And that was my problem. I filtered everything. I filtered it through this filter of she'll be fine, she'll be okay. You watch, you observe, you see what she's doing, you see how she's impacting people. And it was in September of 2004 that we were away in Queensland. It was my 40th birthday, and we were away. And as it happened, that was about 2 months before she died. And I told her that week, I said, I'm going to write a book about you. And she looked at me and she said, well, who would be interested in my story? Why would anyone, you know, who would be inspired by that? Which inspires me all the more, just her incredible humility that she's got. And we sat down and I said, all right, tell me. I want to know about your life. I want to know. And we started talking and she started telling me about her childhood. And she was a twin. Her sibling was stillborn. She was born in 1935, just before Second World War, Jewish background. So there was incredible challenges that she had to overcome. And all that with parents that obviously loved her but couldn't communicate that to her. So she developed a belief early in her life that she had to work to earn love, and she wasn't loved unconditionally. You know, she had, it was an understandable expectation of the time that you had to, you know, you had to do what you had to do to help the family and the business. And, you know, they came to Australia and, you know, her sister, she was 8 years older than her sister and 10 years older than her brother. And she had to look after them while her parents were doing stuff they had to do. And it was this belief that she created. And I think the stress and anxiety that came from that, I don't know whether that potentially contributed to the disease. I mean, there's no answer to that question. But you can only but wonder if, you know, she was nurtured a bit more, whether she had that, felt that unconditional love, maybe she would still be here. You also look at some of the other habits that she created, the smoking and the drinking and the rich foods from the Eastern European background are all part of it. You just don't know. And so when that time came to where she was faced with this challenge, initially her first response to the cancer was, why me? It's not fair. And that was the breast cancer. And because her attitude was, well, it's not fair, it's almost like it's just come out of nowhere. She didn't really stop and think about why it was there or what was her responsibility in this. And so after she had the operation and she had the lump removed and she had the treatment, she got the all clear, she just went back to a normal way of thinking, living, habits, that sort of stuff. And then 18 months later, it came back and reappeared secondary in her liver. And that's when she decided, right, now's the time, I need to start dancing. And that, from that point, I'll tell you what, she was given probably 2 or 3 years to live. That's what they said to her. But then the previous doctors told her she was all clear. So she thought, well, why would I believe them now when what they said to me wasn't really true last time? So she decided, no way, I'm going to be here because I've got things to do and people to love and all that sort of stuff. And she would just, you know, the stuff she overcame, I just look back and go, whenever I have a bad day, I think about her and I just get over myself pretty quickly. I can tell you that. She was an amazing woman.
Incredible. And went the holistic way as well as conventional medicine. One of the rites of passage for you, as I understand it, and it's the one that we all have to come to terms with at some time or another, but it can often take a very long time. To you, she was your mum. Of course, to other people, she was Sue, or she was wife or mother-in-law or whatever. That was something you had to wake up to, wasn't it?
It was indeed. She was, you know, I think we look at our mums And it's such an appropriate time right now because we've got in a month, it's Mother's Day. And I just think we take our mums for granted so much. You know, we expect them. And as I did, as my brother and sister did, as my dad did, we just expected her to be there for us and do for us and protect us and nurture us and feed us and clothe us and all that sort of stuff. And the whole time we just forgot that she was a person. You know, and as much as we loved her totally unconditionally from all of our hearts, we just expected her to be there for us. And it was that week in Queensland when I was talking to her that I realised, and that was such a life-changing moment when it dawned on me that she's a person like me that just wants to be loved. She wants to feel important. She wants to be part of something special. That was her, and that was such a defining moment.
And who doesn't? Isn't that, I mean, one of the greatest lessons that you learned? And along with putting the important over the urgent, doing what you really want to do, are they the top lessons you learned from Mum?
Totally, absolutely. And it's just, I now look at every single person differently. You know, it's when you're young, you look at people that are older and you think, oh, they're just old. You know, we never stop to think that everyone's got a story. You know,
then later you see them as their role rather than who they are.
Exactly. We don't stop to think. Everyone has got a story. Everyone's inspiring. My mum is, to me, she's incredibly special. But, you know, even to you, Elaine, you don't know her, never knew her. And most people don't. So it's like, why? Well, because she is such an average or ordinary person that's made a decision and created some above average or extraordinary outcomes. We can learn from that, and I believe that every single person on this planet has the same power inside them. And as I look at, I now look at people that might be in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s or whatever, and I go, they've got a story, and I would love to sit down and hear about the things they've done, the things they've overcome, the people they've touched, the people they've loved, all their successes in life. And I think the other strong lesson is that we all have, we're hard on really one person we're the hardest on, and that's ourselves, and where we need to be able to give ourselves a pat on the back and look at all the, you know, even a smile, even a word of encouragement that makes someone feel better makes us a good person. And I think if we can just understand that, my mum never really understood it, and she never really understood her power and the influence she'll have. And she's now, you know, I know she's with me in this journey right now, and she's looking down going, wow, if I'd known how amazing I was, maybe things would be different. And that's a lesson that I think I'm trying to get everyone to understand, that we're all just amazing, whether we're famous celebrities or whether we're just someone that's got a family that we love and we'll do anything for. We're all incredible people because we all will impact not just one person, but thousands and millions of people for many, many generations.
I could not agree more. And in fact, I have to say, when I was reading, I used to get very angry when one particular politician was always referring to ordinary Australians, and I wanted to scream, nobody's ordinary.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Congratulations. It's a beautiful book. Your race to Mum's bedside when she was dying made me cry, but I learned a great deal along the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Elaine, and I really appreciate speaking to you.
Andrew Jobling, Dance Until It Rains. Sometimes it can be very, very difficult to keep smiling when the little things accumulate and get in the way. But as Andrew's just illustrated perfectly, it is more than worth a try.